This Reuters article, the journalist evidently thinks that he is an expert on dealing with Islam, writes that ousting the jihadist altogether, that means eliminating jihadists, will require a two-pronged approach. Yes, you could rid the world of jihadists with a two-pronged approach, according to the Reuters journalist, including ground combat in Iraq carried out by Iraqi security forces, Sunni tribesmen, and ethnic Kurdish Peshmerga fighters, perhaps with the guidance of U.S. Special Operations Forces and American advisors. That's all you need to do. Jihadists all gone. Islamic terrorism is a thing of the past. You got no more issues. It's all you got to do, according to Reuters. But does Reuters have any clue that there are jihadist Muslims in every country of the world today? And did they have any clue that thus far when the jihadi Sunnis have confronted the Iraqi security forces, that the Iraqi security forces have been consistently routed? Do they know that in the battles between the Kurdish embrace death fighters and the Sunni jihadists, that the Sunni jihadists have won 3/4 of those encounters? Do they understand that if we arm the Kurds, that they're going to maintain their own independence and therefore there is no possibility of an integrated Iraq, which we claim is the premise for all of this? Do they have any clue that the thing that made the Islamic State what it is today is the integration with Sunni tribesmen? The American Awakening program that was armed and funded with the ruse that it would be used to hunt down Al-Qaeda in Iraq? And now it is what we call Al-Qaeda in Iraq, even though it's simply the Islamic State, that the Sunni tribesmen are literally the backbone, the heart and soul of the Islamic State. How in the world are you going to get the jihadists that comprise the Islamic State and that there are the leaders of the Islamic State to turn on the Islamic State in your two-pronged approach? God, we're dealing with morons. They go on to write, defeating them would almost certainly require airstrikes on Islamic State strongholds in neighboring Syria. Almost certainly, huh? So what are you going to do? The strongholds happen to be cities. They're not military bases. They're cities. What are you going to do? You're going to turn those cities into death zones like Homs and Aleppo? Have you seen pictures of Homs and Aleppo? You're going to make the United States the country that is willing to kill 200,000 Muslim women and children? And you think that somehow that's going to prevail? They say this could be risky, including the possibility of high civilian casualties. The possibility. Man. Obviously, the journalist can write, can string English words together. But what happened during their education? Why is it that they're incapable of being rational? This is a quote from Ali al-Hadari, an Iraqi security expert and former officer in the Iraqi military, which means he's a Shia Muslim aligned with Tehran. To retake areas requires more than airstrikes. It requires specially trained fighters and the support of the population in that area. Well, the airstrikes are going to make a bad situation worse. And there are no specially trained fighters, unless we're going to deploy Americans again. And And if we deploy Americans, you know, America, when it invaded Iraq, just said, you know, we're going to destroy the infrastructure of Iraq. But we really had no clue when it became a civil war between Sunni and Shia. At that point, we had no answers. And that's what it is now. How is America going to go in and fight Sunnis against Shia or on an alliance with Shia? Do you think that the average American wielding a gun can distinguish between a Sunni and Shia Muslim and say, well, if you're a Sunni, you're my enemy, I'm going to kill you. If you're a Shia, you're my friend, I'm going to fight with you. Recognizing that Shia Islam is more lethal to America than is Sunni Islam. And that we've already messed up the Middle East by artificially elevating the influence of Shia Islam over Sunni Islam by giving Iraq to Iran. The Reuters journalist concludes with this paragraph. Washington needs to decide whether it wants to halt and contain Islamic State. Why is there no definite article? It's halt and contain the Islamic State, or wipe it out entirely, said Hayat Alvi, professor of Middle East Studies at the U.S. Naval War College in Newport, Rhode Island. You are a professor. Great. And you're trying to, and you want us to believe that the United States gets to decide if it wants to halt or and contain or wipe out entirely the Islamic State? You think that the United States has the power to obliterate Sunni Islam? And if they did, what would be the result of Shia Islam? Do you think that the United States has the wherewithal to determine in the battle between Sunni and Shia Muslim for supremacy that it ought to side with the Shia over the Sunni? Do you think that the United States can actually obliterate Islam militancy? And how would it do so? You know, we've tried bullets and bombs, and they only made the situation worse. What idiots. If they really want to destroy the Islamic State, the professor at the U.S. Naval War College said, and stop them being a threat, they're going to have to get a lot more committed. Committed to what? How has the United States stopped what it created? It was our invasion of Iraq, which was a big commitment, $2 to $3 trillion worth of commitment, that created the Islamic State. It was our awakening program during the surge that enabled them to be so formidable. It was our stupidity in saying that we're providing weapons to the Free Syrian Army, of which didn't exist, through Qatar, which was providing the weapons to the Islamic State, that enabled them to control such large swaths of land. Everything that we have committed has been suicidal, counterproductive. And now, dear War College professor, you want us to be more committed? Everything we have done has backfired. And so the answer is to continue to do what we have done? Oh, yes, indeed, insanity. This next article reads that Syria's bloody civil war has spawned a separate rift with ramifications well beyond the region known as the Levant. It's actually not known as the Levant amongst anyone other than pseudo-intellectuals. a battle for the very soul of the global jihad movement. It's not a battle for the soul of the jihad movement. What's happening in Syria is a battle between Sunni and Shia Islam for supremacy. It's nothing more, nothing less. The United States decided that it would fight on behalf or provide weapons to enable those to fight on behalf of Sunni Islam against Shia Islam in Syria, only to find out that that backfired because those Sunni Muslims then spread the fight to Iraq against the Shia regime that America had enabled in that country. It is a religious war. They're not fighting for global jihad supremacy. They're fighting to establish Sunni Islam over Shia Islam. That's the battle. There are no good guys here. There's no lesser of two evils. Islamic militants who poured into the embattled nation to help the Free Syrian Army in its bid to topple dictator Bashar Assad are now fighting Assad, the rebels, and each other in a barbaric free-for-all. Again, a pile of lies. There never was a Free Syrian Army. Ever. There were folks outside of Syria that masqueraded as a Free Syrian Army, except they weren't Syrians, and they weren't an army, and they weren't engaged. And no one poured in to the country to help the Free Syrian Army. Islamic militants poured into Syria to aid and abet al-Nusra and the Islamic State and the 50 or 60 other allied fundamentalist Islamic terrorist organizations. None of them, not a single. In fact, it's a conflict in terms that Islamic militants, which would be jihadists, fundamentalist Muslims, would fight on behalf of a secular organization, Free Syrian Army. No. I mean, even in writing these words, you would think that somewhere along the way, the journalist would say, wait a minute, what I just wrote is stupid. I've been misled. At the center of Al-Qaeda's regional affiliate, Jabhat al-Nusra, and the newly emerged Islamic State, which are fighting each other on the battlefield and in the war for recruits to the cause of Islamic terrorism. That's a half-truth at best. Jabhat al-Nusra does have the leadership of Jabhat al-Nusra, which is a fundamentalist Islamic terrorist organization. They want to impose Sharia law. They are ruthless. They would have no issue and have engaged in the obliteration of Christians. Their treatment of the Christian communities they have encountered in Syria is exactly the same as the Islamic State. Convert or die. Raping the women. Their approach towards secularists is the same as the Islamic State. Off with your head. Their goal in terms of establishing an Islamic caliphate, identical. Their goal in imposing Sharia law, identical. There really is no difference between Jabhat al-Nusra and the Islamic State, other than who's in charge. Now, Jabhat al-Nusra does have a decent relationship with al-Qaeda. They are not an al-Qaeda affiliate, but they have a decent relationship with the handful of people that are still associated with al-Qaeda. The Islamic State has not newly emerged. It began 12 or 13 years ago with the invasion of Iraq. That's when it was created. That's not newly emerged. They were fighting each other on the battlefield. There is no indication that that's correct anymore. That was correct, if you go back in time, about 3 to 4 months ago, for about a 3-month period. They were fighting each other. But they have stopped fighting each other. And what appears to have happened is that the Islamic State has become so much better equipped, so much more influential, so much more powerful, so much more enriched, in addition to better armed, that a disproportionate number, a huge number of al-Nusra jihadists have joined the Islamic State. And so al-Nusra has kind of faded into the woodwork. We only heard of them in the last 6 months. We've heard of them only twice. One is in a skirmish down there by the Golan Heights, and the other was they were amongst the militants around Aleppo. And that's it. Otherwise, they are, for all practical purposes now, irrelevant. At this, and by the way, it says that is a barbaric free-for-all. No, it's not a barbaric free-for-all, although the people are barbaric, but it's a religious free-for-all. This is Sunni versus Shia Islam. At the center is the split between al-Qaeda's regional affiliate and the newly emerged, as I said, Islamic State. The two groups are now in open war for supremacy for the global jihadist movement, according to Middle East scholar Aaron Zellin, who wrote a research paper by the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, a U.S.-based think tank. No, they're not. I mean, again, that would be like comparing the U.S. Navy and saying that the U.S. Navy was in a global conflict with New Zealand's Navy for the heart and soul of sailors worldwide. You know, it's 1,000-to-1 difference. That's the difference right now between al-Nusra and the Islamic State. Moreover, they're both Sunni organizations. They're both opposed to Shia Islam. They're both committed to the establishment of Sharia law, which is a legal system based entirely on Muhammad's words and deeds. It's ruthless and barbaric. They both are striving to establish an Islamic caliphate. They're not different, other than who's in charge, and the who's in charge is really irrelevant. It's just amazing how we create these scenarios and say that's what's happening here. And you've got some moron that wrote a paper and all of a sudden he's credible because the media is stupid. Throw in the jihadist-led insurgency in the neighboring Iraq, which has become intertwined in the insurrection in Syria, and the shifting alliances are becoming, for many, even harder to understand. It's not hard to understand. The Syrian religious war began with the American invasion of Iraq, as did the Islamic State. It amazes me that people are so confused as to what's happening in Syria and can't understand the origins of the Islamic State, what conceived them, why they were able to emerge from Iraq and then go into Syria, how they came back from Syria into Iraq, well enough armed to confront the Shias there that America had empowered and now have gained such popularity with Muslim jihadists. And the two wars are one war. It is a religious war between Sunni and Shia Islam. And this notion that America ought to engage on behalf of Shia Muslims against Sunni Muslims shows that we are once again incapable of determining whether or not we have a strategy that has any chance of prevailing. And you can't battle Sunni Muslims on behalf of Shia Muslims and think you're going to prevail. The numbers don't make it even remotely possible. Hello, Glenn. What do you think about al-Nusra and their disappearing act?
Well, Well, Al-Nusra has decided to take a slightly different tack.
Okay.
They're lodging a civil suit against the Islamic State for intellectual property rights infringement of their message and for alienation of affections of their adherents.
Yeah, and I would think they would prevail because even though I think the Al-Nusra, which is the people, and Jabhat, the front, so the front of the people, also called the Victory Front, that I think they were created right around 2012, and they were an affiliation, kind of a roll-up, in a merger and acquisition world, they would be what's called a roll-up, where you take a bunch of smaller operations and you create one larger operations with the economies of scale. And they were since 2012, for better part of 2 years, the dominant player in Syria. In fact, they were so much bigger that with that roll-up that there was nobody else that even mattered in the opposition in Syria. And then you take the Islamic State in Iraq, and they said, the getting's good here. I mean, Qatar's not willing to give us weapons while we're in Iraq, but if we go into Syria, they'll lavish us with weapons. And so they went into Syria. They took all the weapons. They battled a little bit here and there in Syria, essentially took over eastern Syria, and then took those weapons right back into Iraq.
Right, obviously. And then they build up, and then I've said before, then they'll, once they're built up again, they'll go back at Syria, take another crack at Syria once they built all up, They're doing a good job of harvesting resources, but.
Correct.
I remember a political comic from back in the 80s that showed basically a picture of all the same soldier, about six different photos. Is a guide to the different soldiers, involved in Middle East contentions. And, they showed this one was a Shiite soldier and that one was a Sunni and this was a Druze militia person, And, they all look the same. So that was in the 80s, for crying out loud. So all this factionalism and that internecine rivalry, that's just the stock and trade of Islam,
You could look at 100 Islamic State jihadists, and they would all look different, and they would all look the same. And you could compare them to 100 Hezbollah Mujahideen, and they would all look the same, and they would all look different. There is no way to effectively distinguish them if you're on the ground and talking to them. Much less from 20,000 feet in the air as you're trying to drop a bomb.
And the point is that, factionalism, fragmentation, internecine rivalry, that's just what they do. And
correct.
You pointed out yesterday that, the Sunnis, refers to, the works of Muhammad.
Mm-hmm.
But then the Shiites, a big part of this, the difference between the two, is their management philosophy of who should be running Islam, and the Shiites believe should be a descendant of Muhammad. Who's doing their, who exactly is doing their, Brooks Peerage, family trees and pedigrees for who is, the descendant of Muhammad who should be ruler of Israel?
Well, there is no descendant. There is no. The only descendant of Muhammad was actually a descendant of an adopted son and one. There is no descendant.
So the whole position is untenable. She is bound to lose on philosophical grounds eventually.
But there are no traceable descendants of the Quraysh either. And those that have the greatest influence in Islam are not coming from Saudi Arabia. The fact of the matter is there's no arguable, sane position as to justify Sunni Islam over Shia Islam or Shia Islam over Sunni Islam. It's very much like the battle between the Eastern Orthodox Church and the Roman Catholic Church. It's about the same size in terms of difference and overall power and influence and wealth. And neither one has a legitimate case against the other. But they,
one could almost say these people are idiots. Just let them fight it out amongst themselves if they weren't persecuting and slaughtering other people groups and abusing women and stuff. You know what I mean?
Push the women aside for a moment, because Muslim women actually deserve their fate. Muslim women aid and abet their own destruction. I have no sympathy for them. So I'm going to push them aside. The Zoroastrians represent such a insignificant percentage of the population that to engage to try to defend them would be a complete and utter waste. Christians have been annihilated. So there is no, there are no more Christians to defend. There were Christians there before the American invasion. There aren't anymore. And so all you've got now is Sunni versus Shia Muslims. Let them kill each other. And I don't think that we morally should be providing the weapons to both sides, which is what we're doing, so that their killing is in the hundreds of thousands as opposed to the hundreds. But if we were not supplying either side with weapons, if we just completely pulled away, they would have to start killing each other with bows and arrows and with stones. And they would do so, but it would not be our affair. Let them kill each other that way. It's a crude religion. It's a quarantine.
When they double back on the oil emirates, on Saudi Arabia and the oil emirates, then they're going to be screaming bloody murder for help.
Yeah, but good. Let them. Yeah, I mean, if they were to, Qatar is nothing but a gun runner now for Sunni Islam. And Saudi Arabia is the source of all of the fundamentalist mosques. So let them be depowered. Let them take over for them, and stop buying the oil. So who cares if they scream bloody murder? When the Kuwaitis screamed bloody murder that Saddam Hussein had invaded their country, it was in our interest that Saddam Hussein was there versus the Kuwaitis. But what did we get when we booted Saddam Hussein out and gave it back to the Kuwaitis?
So what do we do? So let's say they gain utter success. They take over Syria. Mm-hmm. They take over Iran. They take over the oil.
No, they're not going to take over. They're not going to take over Iran. They don't have the wherewithal to take over Iran.
Basically, you think they'll max out. And they'll have to leave Iran, Saudi Arabia, and the oil emirates alone.
They're not going to take over.
Coming into Portugal, Spain, and stop them.
They're not going to take over Iran. They don't have the wherewithal to do that. They are not going to take over Saudi Arabia because the Saudi Arabian military is way too powerful with American weapons. They're not going to take over Turkey. So then the question is, how much of Lebanon are they interested in? And whether or not they want to have to go against Hezbollah to take over Lebanon. And my guess is they would make the determination that the casualties they would suffer to take over Lebanon from Hezbollah would be too great to justify the small amount of territory.
If Lebanon and Jordan fell, Israel would be screaming bloody murder.
I think they'll take over Jordan. I mean, I think they absolutely will take over Jordan. They'll prevail in Syria. They'll prevail in the Sunni areas of Iraq. The Shia areas of Iraq will essentially merge with Iran. The Kurds will be allowed their little domain up there in the north. And so, you know, if you move them into a part of Jordan, and maybe even all of Jordan, I think that's the full extent of what we're going to see
We know they like oil. We know they like oil, and they may want to take over Kurdistan, you know, if they got that powerful.
Yeah, the problem is that, you know, how do they move from Syria north I don't see how it happens. You know, they're bragging about they want to go into the Caucasus region, but they don't have enough
people. So your point is,
people.
There is a saturation point at which, you know, they'll reach their geographic limits. They'll impose Sharia law within those limits.
Correct.
And then the rest of the world can essentially either buy oil from them or ignore them.
That is correct.
Okay.
That is the sensible strategy towards Islamic militancy is quarantine. Let them do whatever they want to in the areas that they have already infected to the point that there is no hope. And don't engage there. Don't send arms there. Don't do business there. Just like Kerry just had the most moronic speech, which we'll cover tomorrow, on American Muslim relations. And talking about how it's, our biblical responsibility to help the Muslims through the global warming process.
Just back away and stop doing business. Yeah, America and Europe have to get some sanity and draw some very clear lines. They love to draw lines in the sand.
Right.
So let America finally draw some lines and say, look, we are, our laws pertain, not your Sharia.
In Europe and in America, Islam ought to be announced as illegal. It just needs to be designated as a terrorist manifesto, as a declaration of war. And in the Islamic world, just let them be. Walk away. This article's funny. It says that last week, Al-Nusra, struggling to stay relevant and to recruit fighters, released a video featuring three of their fighters as they head off in northern Syria near the city of Aleppo to battle the Islamic State, which was disowned by Al-Qaeda. Well, pal, the Islamic State wasn't disowned by Al-Qaeda, was never owned by Al-Qaeda, and the Al-Nusra did not go to Aleppo to fight the Islamic State. They went to Aleppo to fight the troops of Bashar al-Assad. The message was that they have pure motives. Here's their proclamation. We in Al-Nusra Front, that would be the People's Front, only fight to raise the word of Allah, to make the oppressed triumphant. We only fight to rid the world of the enemy, Bashar and his soldiers. We have come to fight them so that we can impose Allah's law on the country. We have not come to oppress the people, to steal from the people, or to take their property. End quote. Al-Nusra wishes to impose Sharia law. They're fighting in the name of Allah. They're following the words and deeds of Muhammad. That's who they are. If I were to tell you the goals of, and they were to be explained, of the Islamic State, they're identical. Another fighter urges Islamic State fighters to defect and return to the truth. Well, the fact of the matter is that they are defecting, but the other way, al-Nusra to the Islamic State. By joining al-Nusra, which is aligned with several Islamist rebel militias, yes, it was a roll-up in Syria, and has been fighting against the Islamic State since last winter. They were. They aren't anymore. When al-Qaeda leader Ayman al-Zawahiri disowned and disavowed Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the boss of the upstart Islamic State, here was the quote. Al-Qaeda announces that it does not link itself with the Islamic State. It is not a branch of the al-Qaeda group. It does not have an organizational relationship with it, and al-Qaeda is not the group responsible for their actions. That's what al-Zawahiri said. Zawahiri's pronouncement was, we got nothing to do with them. It wasn't that, yeah, we raised them, they were our affiliate, but they went astray, so we're now disowning them. That's not what they said. I mean, these journalists ought to be able to read English. Right? It's pretty straightforward. Zayman al-Zawahiri was not disowning them. He was not cutting their franchise. Said he had nothing to do with them. And that's the truth. He has nothing to do with them. They're not an offshoot of al-Qaeda. There is no correlation whatsoever. Never has been. Isn't, never will be. The point of disavowal, and this is not what that is, again. has sparked mass defections from al-Baghdadi's burdening operation. No, it hasn't. It's gone the other way. I mean, it's... The media is absolutely oblivious. How in the world, even if Americans were capable of being rational, the data that they're being provided is such garbage that it cannot be processed rationally. Jihadist and rebel groups eager to avenge Islamic State assassinations of their comrades took it as a sign that it was open season against the Islamic State. I mean, there is no correlation between what this journalist wrote and reality. None. Hello, Larry. It's always good to see your name on the switchboard. How are you this fine day?
I'm doing good. I don't expect that there's ever going to be much reality when journalists are talking about Islam or anything affiliated with it for fear that they might step on somebody's politically, you know, correct toes. I think what bothers me is that, you got Obama out here asking for $500 million to fund the Syrian rebels. That's ISIS, isn't it?
You know what? At this point, the Syrian rebels are comprised about 90% of is the Islamic State, and about 10% al-Nusra, and the rest is maybe a fraction of 1%. There only is the Islamic State. So we're going to supply them with more weapons so that we can use our weapons to destroy the weapons we've given them. Brilliant.
Brilliant! Brilliant!